impact that something like that would have. So even like with Boston, it was at the starting or the finish line. I mean, that's a very logical place to put something like that to cause the massive amount of casualties that they had. So in our case, you know, we finished inside Memorial Stadium. So it's a landmark for our community and for the University of Illinois. That would be a likely area, so we're going to beef up and do what we have to do to make sure that that area is covered.
In terms of the actual level of security, I mean, do you anticipate that there is going to be some kind of a threat to the Illinois Marathon? It doesn't seem like it's on the same kind of public level, say, as the Boston Marathon.
Clearly it's not. I mean, obviously the premier aspect of the Boston Marathon is there, but I think we would not be doing our community a service if we didn't pay attention to what happened. And our goal is to help our participants and community feel comfortable. Anytime you have a situation like this come up, you know, it obviously creates a level of concern in the community, and we're just going to try to address that.
Have you heard from runners since the events yesterday?
I personally have not. Now, I have heard from citizens who are saying, hey, in light of yesterday, I'd like to volunteer. So it's interesting the response we're getting in our community of people who say, not because they want to be where the action is so much, but they want to be a part of an event that they feel is important.
Have you been given more resources to provide for security for the marathon?
We're working on that now. I anticipate that at least Champaign will be saying, yes, we're going to up the resources.
Have you heard from anyone who feels skittish about participating in this marathon as a result of yesterday's events?
I personally have not. I think Jan has had one or two calls, but again, it's the nature of the beast. Some people are going to react that way.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Illinois Public Media's Chris Berube speaking with Scott Friedline, the security coordinator for the Illinois Marathon. The bombings yesterday in Boston has put security agencies on higher alert. In Illinois, authorities say there have been no specific threats made. Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford spoke with the state's Emergency Management Agency Director, Jonathan Munkin, about efforts here.
We haven't formally raised any type of alert level in the state, but you can imagine that we've taken some proactive steps just to make sure statewide that everybody's ready. So I think the lines of communication are certainly open. We've put out some warnings and some updates to folks as far as, you know, heightened security measures, for example, at the Capitol building or at the Thompson Center. And then we're doing some things kind of behind the scenes from an intelligence perspective to make sure that we have more people available.
Are these any things that people would notice? I mean, will it take longer to get inside certain buildings, things like that?
I think people should expect that it will take longer to get inside of government buildings. I think from a transportation perspective, I think the lines will most likely be a little bit longer, regardless of the form of transportation you're choosing to use, just to make sure that any extra screening that can be done is being done. It's not uncommon for people following events like this, especially the perpetrators, to try and move.
And what are you hearing from the federal government? I know you can't tell us everything that's going on, but, are they just telling you to be vigilant, to be more prepared in that respect?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's certainly the message that they're trying to get out to make sure, you know, no lead is too small to follow up on at this point. They want to make sure that what it comes down to in intelligence is making sure that you find as many of the dots as possible, and then you can draw the lines between them. And that doesn't happen unless everybody's really at that state of awareness where they're reporting additional tips, they're putting that information together, and there's a significant amount of crosstalk between the fusion centers across country.
And there are no threats at this point that you've been made aware of regarding any place or person, anything like that in Illinois?
No. At this point, we don't have anything to suggest that there's any threat directed towards the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago or anything specific like that. So right now, it's just trying to make sure that any information the federal government can provide to kind of narrow the scope of what we're looking at is provided.
And I know nobody wants to see something like this happen, but this is the type of thing that security agencies like your own do train for. I mean, you're working on these types of scenarios all the time.
Absolutely, and I think incredible credit needs to be given, significant credit needs to be given to the public safety entities in Boston, because it shows what was really demonstrated there is it was a horrible incident, but the preparedness of the public safety entities that were represented there in Boston really shone through. They obviously responded extremely well. They were able to do medical triage in a very, very challenging environment, and they were able to save a lot of people that might not have been saved had they not been so quickly reactive to what happened. So that's certainly, if anything, in many respects, you certainly, as you said, never want to see things like this happen. But in many ways, I think for the city of Boston, it's a validation of how hard they've worked to prepare for these types of events, and the extra steps that they've taken, in my opinion, paid off.
was there anything that you really noticed about that that stood out to you, not only among, about the incidents themselves, but about the response?
Yeah, I can tell you that overall, and I think anybody that saw it, the sophistication of the attack is something that, to me, that was the most concerning. It clearly was not something that was just kind of haphazard or put together at the last minute. This was, no matter who it was clearly well thought out and carefully executed. From a response perspective, we certainly, I think one of the best things that Boston was able to do is they were able to process tips that were coming in quickly. They had several teams that were spread throughout the city to make sure that they could render safe any suspicious packages or things like that that were called in. And I think they worked through in a very efficient manner. So ultimately, I thought the flow of information was good. It certainly was, at the beginning, it was pretty overwhelming. There's a lot of information that people are trying to glean from the situation because we want to make sure that we're prepared if it's something that is expected to spread beyond Boston. So I think overall, Boston did an excellent job.
Of course, Americans cherish their freedom, their ability to move around freely and congregate, and that has to be a big problem for security, and I think we saw that yesterday. This event in Boston is probably somewhat of a nightmare for security officials just on trying to protect people because people are moving around so much and it's such a wide area.
Well, absolutely. By definition, a race, people are going to be moving frequently. There were 27,000 runners that were registered for it. And then ultimately, you have the thousands of people that are there as supporters. So any public event is going to create those types of challenges. Illinois is certainly no stranger to those types of events, even as recent as hosting the NATO summit in Chicago. But those types of things, what you want to do is you want to make sure that people feel comfortable to continue to go outside and do those things. The last thing that we want is for people to not feel safe or stop doing that, because ultimately the people that cause these incidents, that ultimately conduct the attacks themselves, that's what they want. And our job is to make sure that people can continue to be out there, feel safe, and they don't have to worry about being in a public space because they know that we've taken the proactive steps necessary to protect them.
Do you see that this will change how security is handled in the U.S., how agencies like yours deal with such events going forward in the future?
Well, as unfortunate as these events are, we learn something from every single one of them. So whether you're talking about a shooting like we saw in Sandy Hook, or you're talking about explosives that we've seen in a circumstance like the Boston Marathon, or even going back to 1996 and the Atlanta Olympic bombing, all of those things are teaching points for public safety. And these are lessons and best practices that we share on a regular basis, because ultimately we have to adapt to the changing environment. The tactics change, the equipment changes, all those types of things from the perpetrator's perspective, and we need to make sure that we're continually adapting to it as well.
Earlier you mentioned that there was going to be some heightened security around the state, especially at government buildings. How long do you expect that will stay in place? Do you know at this point?
Well, I think a lot of it just depends on intelligence flow. So if we get more specific information as to the nature of the threat, if somebody claims responsibility, or we get a clearer picture of who the person was that conducted these attacks, that will have a lot to do with where we are as far as the heightened security. So just like yesterday in Boston, the police commissioner wanted to reinforce that this is still an active event right now. No one should assume that it's completely over. He's not saying that to scare people. He's saying that to make sure that people stay aware and that they're providing those tips and information. So until we have more intelligence, so we have a better idea of exactly what we're facing, ultimately that's what dictates the readiness level.
And you're just asking the public if they see something out of the ordinary or suspicious, possibly, to contact authorities?
Absolutely. I mean, as it comes down to it, the general public is really our greatest source of information, because they're the ones that they have their routines, they go about their business the same way each day, and they know when things are different. They know when something's out of place from what it's like every other day. So that type of information is very, very important to us, and we're always seeking that additional input from the general public. People, if they do see something, they should reach out to local law enforcement. That's your first resource, because if it's something that's of a time-sensitive nature, we want to make sure that the response is quick. We collect that information from local law enforcement at the state level. So that's what I would encourage, is reach out to local law enforcement if you see something out of place.
Illinois Emergency Management Agency Director Jonathan Munkin speaking with Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford. Munkin says security is tighter around the state today at government buildings and several other locations.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of Gertrude Chandler Warner, born in Putnam, Connecticut, 1890, the creator of the Boxcar Children series of books for children. She taught first grade for over 30 years, and one day, when she stayed homesick, she thought up the story of the Boxcar Children. Her family, when she was a child, lived near the railroad tracks, and she'd often go out and watch the trains go by, sometimes get a glimpse into the window of the caboose, and sometimes see a little stove and table and a coffee pot on the stove, which fascinated her, the idea that someone was living in the caboose. And she invented the story about four orphaned children, Henry, Jesse, Violet, and Benny, ranging in age from 6 to 14, who, after their parents die, go to live with their grandfather, who the children feel is a cruel man, and so they run away and they set up housekeeping in an abandoned boxcar, supporting themselves and living a life of great independence. Gertrude Chandler Warner said that the story at first raised a storm of protest from librarians who thought the children were having much too good a time without any parental control. And Warner said that is exactly why children liked the story. She wrote the original 19 Boxcar Children stories. In the years since, more than 100 titles have been added, written by others. It's the birthday of Kingsley Amis, born in London, 1922, went to Oxford, where he met Philip Larkin, who became his best friend, and who encouraged Amis to become a novelist. He at first wanted to be a poet, but Larkin helped him turn his sketches about campus life into his first novel, Lucky Jim. It's the birthday of Charlie Chaplin, born in London, 1889, who started out as a vaudeville actor in a comedy troupe, went to Hollywood, was shocked at how crude the movies were, started directing himself, and in the year 1914, he directed, wrote, and starred in 16 films in 6 months, in which he invented his most famous character, the Little Tramp, and he became a star recognized around the world. 1787, the first American play opened at the John Street Theater in New York City, written by Royal Tyler. He was 29, graduate of Harvard, veteran of the Continental Army. The play was entitled The Contrast, first play by an American writer to be professionally produced.